Adam's calendar is suggested to be the oldest made man-made structure in the world, sometimes referred to as the African Stonehenge. It predates both Stonehenge and the Great Pyramid of Giza by tens of thousands of years. It's located in South Africa. It is a standing stone circle about 30 meters in diameter, has been estimated by some accounts to be more than 75,000 years old. We'll get Michael's take on this. He wrote a book, of course, called Adam's Calendar. Various astronomical alignments have been identified at the site, and it is possibly the only example of a completely functional, mostly intact megalithic stone calendar in the world. So we'll be back with Michael Tellinger and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Michael Tellinger. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Michael, before we go to calls, let's talk a little bit about Adam's calendar, which you have written a book about called Adam's Calendar. How old do you think that structure is?
You know, that's a number, 75,000 years, was right in the beginning when I was first shown Adam's Calendar by Johann Heine. Johann Heine rediscovered it by accident in 2003. Nobody paid attention to him. Then he met me in March 2007. And everything changed. So in those early days, we worked with astronomers and archaeoastronomers and people to look at, you know, the precessional wobble and the precession of the equinoxes and all that, all the kind of things that we could try and figure out to get an age. And the number that came back was, you know, it's older than 75,000 years. That's what some of the archaeoastronomers that I spoke to were prepared to give me. So that's what we put out there, just as an indication that we're dealing with a very, very old site. But since then, it's become very clear that it's a lot older than that. It's at this stage, the estimate is that Adam's Calendar is about 300,000 years old.
Wow.
And there's various reasons I say. Remember right in the beginning when we started to talk, I told you that as recently as January 2020, I discovered that the stone circles are around 300,000 years old and possibly older.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say this is when I learned how to fly my own drone, and I started to fly my own drone and be able to hover and look at things and film things that I was interested in that helped me do research and observations, I suddenly realized that the rivers that formed in the mountains around us, the rivers and the streams are younger, more recent than the stone circles and the terraces and the channels that connect them together. Because there are many examples of the rivers coming down the mountain and washing away the stone circles and the terraces. So it's very obvious what the sequence is. So it's now very clear that the stone circles were built, and then afterwards there was a change in the climate. There was a shift, climatic shift, and rain started to fall, the rivers formed, and they started to wash some of the stone circles away. And the climate change was so severe after the stone circles were built that certain areas where we are, for example, we're in the high line, we're about 1,500 meters above sea level. So is that about just 5,000 feet above sea level where we are. So, and it's all mostly grassland. But when you go lower down into what's known as the Lowveld towards the ocean, it drops down about a kilometer. So suddenly you're like, you know, 700 meters, 500 meters above the sea level. And the climate changes to sort of subtropical climate. And everything grows there. You know, that's where they grow all the mangoes, avocados, papaya, and so bananas and so forth. And it's literally down the hill from us. But the stone circles continue down the hill. They continue all the way down to the coast, but you can't see them because they're covered by trees and vegetation. So what is clearly has happened here is that when the stone circles were built, there was a completely different climate. The topography looked very different. The vegetation was very, very different. And then I suspect that either there was a dramatic climate change or the stone circles were responsible for actually contributing towards the climate change, which was maybe putting more oxygen in the air, creating more clouds or creating clouds and rain-bearing clouds, and then changed the climate to a much more higher rainfall climate that then formed the rivers And in the lower lying areas, we now have a completely different climate with trees and much bigger trees and so forth.
Do you think, Michael, that there was some kind of technology within the calendar that generated things like this? Or is it still able to?
I got distracted there, telling you how old the stone circles are, and this is the indication how old they are. So the technology in Adam's calendar is really, the calendar itself is just a built-in feature. The fact that you can tell every day of the year by where the sun sets. So the calendar is still a functioning, as you quite correctly described in your introduction, it is a functioning megalithic ancient stone calendar. You can still tell reasonably accurately every week and month of the year just by as the shadow shifts from the winter solstice to the summer solstice. That's six months. So 6 months from the one to the other, and then all the way back gives you a whole year. And the shadow falls from the one edge of the calendar stone, and as the sun moves to the 6 months away to the winter solstice, the summer solstice, the shadow moves from the one edge of the stone to the other edge of the stone. So you can very clearly see when the end of the year comes, when the shadow is on the edge of the calendar stone. But that's just a built-in feature, because the Adam's calendar itself is a very powerful energy-generating device. We now know it even more than ever before. It's a large 30-meter diameter toroidal field energy generator. So a giant torus, I often used to call it a beam me up Scotty device, like the gold, buddy? Where would you like the gold beamed up to, Scotty? And it's just incidentally so that it seems to have been constructed by Enki. The time is about 300,000 years ago, and I'll tell you how I know this and why we suspect and know this. And then the other important thing is that we now are very certain, I'm certain, with a lot of support now from other researchers that are joining me in this, that the entire crater, the impact crater that's right in front of the calendar, Adam's calendar is on the edge of a cliff that drops down eventually a kilometer. 3,500 feet down into what's known as the Barberton Impact Crater, the oldest impact crater on Earth, where we see some of the earliest life forms. And this brings back all the global geologists and people that study all that stuff. So it's right on the edge of this impact crater. But what it now turns out is that what they think is an impact crater was originally a much smaller impact crater that actually turned into probably the first ancient gold mine that Enki created on Earth, or here in Southern Africa, rather. It may not have been on Earth, but definitely in Southern Africa. It's huge. It's 30 kilometers across. So, and it's a giant mine, a giant ancient gold mine filled with sand, yellow sand, like what you get from, the remains, the tail ends of gold processing. It's quite spectacular. So, I suspect that they were mining the gold down below, and then they would bring it up to the edge of the mountain and then put it into this machine that was a teleportation device and beam it up somewhere, wherever they wanted to beam it up to, or beam it to another part of the world. Who knows? At this stage, we're just speculating. But we know that Adam's calendar is a very powerful machine. It is, of all the stone circles and ancient sites, it generates the highest frequencies that we've measured. It generates Amazing. Electromagnetic fields. Frequencies in the gigahertz, up to 375 gigahertz and beyond. We have now recently measured, with a new tool that we found, the electromagnetic field runs about 5 centimeters above the ground. There's a swirling magnetic field, or electromagnetic field, which above the ground, which is the evidence that there will be one under the ground and twisting in the opposite direction, like balanced toroidal fields do. So this is all, I can't share everything with you. We don't have enough time, but this is it's a spectacular, spectacular place.
What incredible brain power to come up with these things, Michael, from the ancients.
Exactly. And, what I was going to say is Zachariah Sitchin actually gives us a very clear indication of when Adam's calendar was most likely built. So in one of his books, he has a little paragraph that says the following. Forty Shah, after arriving on Earth, Enki built himself a special place of observing in the deep Abzu, in line with the peaks, and his abode in the north. So, you know, it literally describes Adam's calendar to the T. So, special place of observing, a calendar, looking down into the valley, the ancient mine, in line with the peaks. There are two pyramids down in the valley, which line up with Adam's calendar and the rise of Orion. And then with his abode in the north, Great Zimbabwe is exactly north of Adam's calendar. And there are several indications in some of Sitchin's translations that suggest that Great Zimbabwe may have been the place where Enki actually built his house. I'm not saying that Great Zimbabwe was his house. I'm saying that he built his house there. However, it is possible that Great Zimbabwe was his house. And what is the main feature in Great Zimbabwe, George? I don't know if you can recall an image of Great Zimbabwe. It's those big, thick walls. They're 6 meters wide in places and 10 meters tall. And the main feature in Great Zimbabwe is this giant conical tower, cone-shaped tool that stands that 11 meters tall.
Huge.
So for a 35 meters tall, a 35 feet tall conical tower, a giant cone-shaped tool, and this is the other really interesting thing. On our last trip, I've now done two sort of sacred journeys to Africa that we call sacred journeys to Africa with my friend Sam Osmanagic, the founder of the Bosnian Pyramid, which is another spectacular place. And if you haven't had Sam on your show, I highly recommend you do. His knowledge of pyramids, I don't think you've ever known anyone that knows as much about pyramids as Sam Osmanagic. He has been to every pyramid you can imagine. He's even been on top of and inside of the Chinese pyramids. So just a little hint on, if you want real info on pyramids, he's the guy to talk to.
Interesting. Anyway, we're talking about Egyptian pharaohs tomorrow with a special guest, so that'll be intriguing. Go ahead, Michael.
Exactly. So Sam and I have done these sacred journeys to Africa, and he's got some really amazing technology tools and measuring devices that he travels with. And we measured the negative iron content, the negative iron concentration in the stone circles, at Adam's calendar, and then at Great Zimbabwe. He's obviously measured it in the tunnels, the Ravne tunnels that lead up to the Bosnian Pyramid. And so what we found is that the stone circles have a much higher elevation of negative ions than normal nature around us, even more so than you get in very high negative ion areas. Now, negative ions are very good. Obviously, they're very good for you because negative ions destroy viruses and pathogens and anything that harms your body. Negative ions neutralize it, especially viruses. So, you know, it's good to have a high negative ion environment around you, and it helps your body recover from illness and so forth. So the stone circles themselves are very high in negative iron content, and that's probably because of the electromagnetic fields that are generated naturally by the frequencies of the Earth. And it's those natural frequencies, by the way, that also vibrate your body, the trillions of cells in your body, as you mentioned earlier. And it's the vibration of the natural frequency of the Earth that vibrates the trillions of cells in your body that actually heals you. So this is why we've experienced so much healing in the stone circles and at Adam's calendar, because it vibrates your cells of your body with good Earth frequencies, most likely with the Schumann resonance as the base frequency and various fractals above that. So we measured high negative ion content, stone circles, and at Adam's calendar, three times as high as in the stone circles, about 150,000 per cubic centimeter. This is natural, right? And then at Great Zimbabwe, at the conical tower, is the highest concentration that Sam has ever measured anyway. It goes up to 450,000 negative ions per cubic centimeter. It's unbelievable.
How did they make these things 300,000 years ago, Michael?
Exactly. Well, they obviously had this very acute and astute knowledge of sound resonance and frequency and how to use it for all these things. You know, Royal Rife figured out how to use frequency to cure all disease.
Right.
George Lakowski figured out how to use frequency to make his Lakowski resonator, his multiple wave oscillator that cured disease. We have many inventors that have figured out, most recently Anthony Holland from Skidmore College. It showed how sound frequencies kill cancer cells. So this is, we've known this in recent times, but obviously the big pharma companies are stopping that from coming out and do everything to remove that from our body of knowledge because they don't want that. They want us to suffer and sell us medicine every month. So in ancient times, there weren't no big pharma companies. There were just the Anunnaki, and they took care of themselves. So they used that knowledge and that information for their own benefit. And we're going back towards that. We're moving back towards using this knowledge for the benefit of humanity. And we're getting there very quickly. And if you don't know what I'm referring to, if your listeners don't know what I'm referring to my work with the One Small Town and the Ubuntu movement. So we're very rapidly moving towards where communities take control of their well-being and prosperity and abundance and bring this kind of technology in for themselves. Don't wait for the government or don't wait for Big Pharma to bring it in for them. We bring it in for ourselves.
Are you amazed by some of these ancient discoveries? Do they just baffle you?
You know what baffles me, George, is the simplicity of it. Yes, it baffles me, and I must also say that I'm eternally grateful, and I'm still wondering how I ended up here. Why did it land in my lap? And I guess it landed in my lap because I'm the guy that recognized it, identified it, and shared it with the world. Because if it was just an archaeologist that didn't have knowledge of sound frequency, cymatics, they would not have recognized it. So it landed in my lap, so I'm eternally grateful that I've been able to share it with people like you and millions of people around the world. And yes, I'm baffled. I'm baffled by the amazing simplicity of how this technology actually works. It's just spectacular. Cone-shaped tools, donut-shaped stones, and magnetrons, which are flower-shaped, these little flower-shaped ornaments, like from little ones at the size of your watch to much larger ones, you know, the size of a hubcap on a car wheel, and then large magnetrons, 50 meters in diameter, all generating huge amounts of energy. And once you start looking into magnetron technology and donut-shaped technology and cone-shaped tools, you recognize that in all ancient cultures, some of your listeners and you are familiar with those Sumerian carvings of the bird-shaped beings and the winged beings holding that pine cone in their hand, right? So they're showing us cone-shaped tools. And then on his arm is another cone that points towards a wristwatch. And that wristwatch is very clearly a magnetron with these teardrop shapes that go to the center, almost like the logo of NBC or CBS or NBC, one of them. And you start to recognize that's the advanced technology that they used.
Michael, when we come back at the bottom of the hour here, we're going to take phone calls with you. They're lining up. Michael Tellinger with us as we talk about vanishing civilizations and ancient artifacts. Several of his books include Slave Species of the Gods, Adam's Calendar. I'm going to ask him when we come back if there's another book coming out. Who knows? And we'll be back with much more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you along with Michael Tellinger. And let's go to the calls. Let's go to Keith in Spokane, Washington to get us started. Hey, Keith, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I really, really, really like your program. I've been listening off and on for years.
Well, thank you.
So the reason why I was calling is actually at the very beginning of the program, you guys were talking about Enki and Anunnaki.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have a master's degree in archaeology. I wrote my master's dissertation on Sumerian religion. So, and he was saying, well, we don't know, but actually, if you go by what the Sumerians actually wrote about the Anunnaki, because those were what they considered their gods and their first kings, they actually describe that the Anunnaki came from the south, meaning on land, and when they left, they used these portals that they describe in order to go back to their prospective planets. So, as he was saying, you know, that could have been a use for these circles. I've studied some of the circles all over the world. I was really interested in the ones up by Normandy. But when I looked at the Adam's calendar, I noticed a very, very close resemblance to a bunch of the ancient Sumerian symbolism. So I really wanted to maybe if your guest wanted to speak to me later, or if he wants to look into that, because I noticed that correlation there. It has the same form of artwork that is in a lot of the ancient Sumerian symbolism, as far as the religious talismans and stuff like that.
So all right, let's find out from you, Michael. What do you think of that? Could it be a portal?
Well, sorry, is it Keith? Keith. Keith, hi. Thanks for that comment, Keith. That's very interesting. I'm aware of some of what you're saying, but I would like to find out more. If you have, so please feel free to email me. My email is very simple. It's on my website, michaeltillinger.com. You can find it there. If you want to share with me, then we can open up a conversation if it goes that way. I'm always keen to learn more. But let's just talk about Adam's calendar as is. So I can only share so much in the space of time that we have. We have a vast body of knowledge and information about these sites, not just Adam's calendar, but the stone circles themselves, what they may have been used for, what they were most likely used for, and it's, a lot of it is connected to the mining of gold and to terraforming and to changing the climate and to possibly creating a more habitable climate. Yeah, there's so much here, and often we are speculating because we read the Sumerian text, read some of the translations, but often there can be misinterpretations, and so it's one constantly has to have, you can reach certain conclusions, but be prepared to change those conclusions based on new evidence that comes your way. And that's how I always address these and approach this information. Right now, we know we're dealing with very advanced technology. There's no doubt in my mind that the cone-shaped tools, the torus stones, and the magnetrons we have are the sort of three holy trinity, should I say, of the advanced tools and technology that they use here. And just to let you know, about a week ago, I discovered that the cone-shaped tools and magnetron technology in Egypt I've known about for 10 years already. But, and that's not widely known, it's completely misunderstood in Egyptology. It'll be interesting when you ask your Egyptologist about if they know about the cone-shaped tools, magnetron technology, and I discovered that when they opened up the tombs in the Pyramid of Djoser about 100 years ago in the 1920s or 30s, guess what they found in some of the passages that were unfinished? They found a pile of torus stones, identical to the torus stones that I have in my museum. So now we not only have cone-shaped tools and magnetron used in Egypt, but also evidence of torus stones used as part of that technology. It just gets more and more interesting.
It sure does. Keith, thank you for that. And you can email Michael through his website, as he mentioned, and kick up a conversation there. Next up, Jeff is with us in Durango, Colorado. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. Well, I tell you what, you just can't beat Coast. We'd be in intellectual poverty without Coast, that's for sure. Michael, you nailed it. But when I hear you went over and we're talking to Nassim Haramein, what did you go to the right guy? And that he's your colleague is just
perfect,
stunning. There's somebody else that agreed with you absolutely, completely. And you haven't kind of nailed it. You've absolutely nailed it. The torus configurations, I just before you got on, I had no idea. I sent a text and I was relating to Dave the way the torus fields that David Adair did his miraculous technology was exactly the same configuration. And you're talking about something along the same line, torus field technology was later slipped into something called the Ark. And not to mention Papa Von Braun, Wernher von Braun, if he was here right now, he'd be just laughing and enjoying this tremendously because,
well, a few years ago, NASA put out this big press release about their latest jet propulsion laboratories, their new engine, this quantum technology engine. I can't exactly remember what terms they used, but the description of it was And when you look at the engine that they show, this is the most advanced engine that they want to use in space and whatever. And if you look at this engine, it's a cone. It's a cone-shaped engine.
And again, yeah, you're right. And all the thrusters are cone-shaped, too. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Next, yeah. Let's go to Brendan in Austin, Texas. Hey, Brendan, go ahead.
Hey, thanks so much, George. Thank you, Michael, Tom, all the listeners and everybody. Thanks so much. So I had a quick question. How do you think that South Africa would react if ETs came back? And how do you think the globe would react? Do you think that South Africa might have a little bit of an advantage, that they wouldn't panic as hard because they have this precedent behind it? And super quick, you should check out this film director, Neil Blomkin. Sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that last name, but he's from South Africa, and he makes movies about ETs, like District 9 and Elysium. It's a lot of stuff about xenophobia and segregation and how that would affect ETs coming down. So, yeah, you should check that out and everybody else. They're really good movies.
Yeah, you nailed it. Neil Blomkamp is one of my favorite directors. He's South African. I think he lives in Canada. He did District 9 that made him world famous, obviously, and then he followed that up with Elysium. He went from no-name actors to all the A-grade actors from, Good Will Hunting dude it was all the A-grade actors. So Neil Blomkamp really, really did well for himself with District 9. Yeah.
Joe in Long Island, New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Michael, it sounds to me like these were people for hire, not locals, just for mining. So it could have been from, maybe people from India had them doing this, or Atlantis. It doesn't sound like they're locals to the area. It sounds like it's just like they're hirelings.
Well, they weren't locals. They came from space, didn't they, Michael?
They certainly weren't from here. They came from, from space or another dimension, or however you want to describe that. At this stage, everything points that this is Anunnaki. Adam's calendar is definitely an Enki's construct. They created humanity. That's the other thing we haven't discussed here, is like, we clearly read in the Sumerian translations about the creation of a species, the Adamu race, the Adamu species, to be the slaves in the gold mines. It's spelled out very, very clearly. Now, African shamans, specifically my late friend Kreta Mutwa, who passed a few years ago now, about 2 years ago, Kreta Mutwa was very vocal about the fact that Adam's calendar was the place that humanity was created by the gods, by the Anunnaki, to be the slave in the gold mines. This is no secret. So I speak about this in great detail in some of my videos and other lectures and so forth. So it seems that they came here to Southern Africa, wherever they came from, and they started the vast gold mining operations here. And this is where they created the species that became the human race, I guess. And they created the species to be the slaves in the gold mines. But there's a lot more to that story than, it's always far more complicated than we imagine it to be, because the first few humanoids that they created were asexual. They were androgynous. They were male-like, but they couldn't procreate. So they cloned these slaves for the first few thousand years. They kept cloning them, and we have these cloning chambers here among the Stone Circle ruins, many of them actually these hexagonal shapes like honeycomb or bees, where bees grow their babies, or how ants grow their babies and so forth. So these honeycomb structures, Stone Circle ruins, are actually the cloning chambers where they were cloning a lot of these early slaves to be the slaves in the gold mines. And then eventually they decided that they wanted them to procreate themselves, because it just became too time-consuming and laborious to clone a species. And that's where we get the biblical story of they took the essence from Adam's rib, and the Sumerian story, which is identical, took the essence from Adam's rib. So essence would mean DNA, and they created Eve from Adam's rib so that Eve would have the same DNA. And so you start seeing the parallel, the mirror stories between the Bible and the Anunnaki creation of a species, the Adamu race or humanity, and it gets weird and bizarre, freaky and exciting at the same time.
That's so true. Lyra's with us in Mojave, California. Hi, Lyra.
Hi.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Are you there?
Yep.
Okay. Hi. I'm in the unincorporated area of Mojave. There's only about 5 or 6 homesteaders in this little area.
Yeah.
And I'm in between 2 mountain ranges and everything. This guy, Michael, dude, I'm so happy you're on. You've just solved the universe for me. Everything you've been saying has been happening out here. We've got the weather is, I'm in the Mojave Desert, mind you. The weather is now always, there's a thick fog every single day, tons of clouds. The mountains are being terraformed on either side of me with these huge flower symbols. There, I don't know about sunstones. Everything's magnetic. And there are several UFO groups and chat groups I'm in. And one of them were just talking about showing pictures of their homes, even in England and Egypt and stuff, their homes suddenly being magnetic when UFOs are flying around. And they just got through saying that they had these things happening to them where their bodies felt like they had earthquakes in them. They were vibrating. A huge portal just opened up on the lot next to me, which apparently was bought by the Freemasons about 30 years ago. They went through a big court battle trying to get it. There's land everywhere for sale. I don't know why they wanted that one, but I guess I do now. and there are these stones that light up like big flashlights all on the mountain. You were talking about sunstones. I don't know if that might be it, that they lit up only during the day.
All right, let's get some of his thoughts. Michael, have you ever been to the Mojave?
Yeah. I spent some time there in, I think, 2011. My second trip to the USA, it's a spectacular place, spectacular place. That brings us to a whole another, to another part of human history. You know, we all know there were giants. In ancient times, there were giants. Some of the giants were, as according to the Book of Enoch, were up to a mile high. And these were the big guys. So if we had giants, then we also had giant trees and giant vegetation and giant mushrooms and giant grass and giant other things that would be at the bottom of the forest. And I'm starting to reach a conclusion now that many of what are now deserts, these days are deserts, were actually the ancient forests of giant trees that were culled and cut, and then the trees were processed for the gold. Because trees, just like all plants, are full of monatomic gold going up the stem. And if you cull the tree then dies, and that the monatomic gold then instantly turns into diatomic gold before the tree petrifies, and they can extract that gold. So I suspect that much of what we see, the deserts in the world today, used to be the ancient forests of the giant trees. They were then turned into deserts because they culled all the trees to extract the gold out of these trees. So when we look at deserts today, we're actually looking at the ancient forest floors of what used to be giant forests on Earth.
Any more new books coming out, Michael?
George, I would love to. I've got about 3 books that I've started, but I just found it's too time-consuming and too labor-intensive. It's a lot easier for me to do videos. You know, I can sit down and talk for an hour on a video, share a lot of information,
sure, and
put that out on my channel. So if people are interested, unfortunately, it's probably not a book, but you can get a lot of my videos. And I continue putting new videos out every week. So go to my website and michaeltellinger.com, click on join my video channel or join Michael's video channel. And there we have hundreds of hours of videos, new documentaries,
well,
new research all
great,
the time.
Great job, Michael, and we've got everything linked up at your website. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Benall, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.